Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it on KMOX as we roll on with the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. As this hour, we'll have a couple of guests on the show. We'll have Nate Gatter joining us in about 10 minutes or so. And then Kevin Wheeler is going to join us towards the bottom of the hour. Do have some good news for you. It would appear that our great national nightmare that is the Major League Baseball uniform fiasco is going to be coming to an end. The Major League Baseball Players Association sent out a memo to all the players, and they gave a few updates on this. So if you haven't been following along on this, the uniforms don't look good. The numbers don't look good. The names don't look good. When there's a little bit of sweat, it looks like it is completely soaked. On the road grays, the pants and the jersey tops don't match. And they're rather see-through as well, at least the pants are at times. So just a lot of things that did not go well with this. And there didn't seem to be much planning from a Major League Baseball standpoint on actually rolling out these uniforms. Well, this internal memo that was sent out by the Major League Baseball Players Association, it put 100% of the blame on Nike, not on Fanatics, but on Nike. And if you're not familiar with how all this works, Fanatics produces the uniforms, but Nike basically designs them, and then Fanatics does the producing for them. But also the material that was being used this year, which is more of kind of like a sweat wicking type of material, which is not something that baseball uniforms have been previously, that was a Nike air quotes innovation. I thought the memo read, quote, "At its core, what has happened here is that Nike was innovating something that didn't need to be innovated." So that was the line from the MLB Players Association memo. And they put 100% of the blame on Nike. Now, like the old cliche goes, the answer to every question is money. So if you're looking and trying to figure out why would the Major League Baseball Players Association essentially absolve the Fanatics side of this and put all the blame on Nike, well, the Fanatics side provides a lot of money for Major League Baseball players, like tens of millions, if not more, probably hundreds of millions of money goes between Fanatics and players because they are in charge of all the licensed gear. So you're not gonna, if you can avoid making them upset, it probably makes sense because they're going to pay you a lot of money. So the bigger question here is, when is this going to get fixed? Well, that's kind of the bad part of this. It doesn't look like it is going to get fixed this year. It is something that is probably not going to be fixed until 2025. You know, there's some teams out there that still don't have their full assortment of uniforms for this year. So all teams have up to 5 uniforms. Like for the Cardinals this year, they'll have 4 uniforms plus eventually the City Connect once that does get unveiled. That's why they had to get rid of their red spring training batting practice top that they normally wear in spring training because of the City Connect that's going to come out at some point this time. So every team is allowed up to 5 jersey combinations that they wear. Not every team has all 5 in place yet. Those things are still being produced. This has been an abject failure by everybody involved in this in getting this rolled out. So to think that they could about face in the middle of the season and get basically the uniforms that had previously been produced and produce them when we're a month into the season and they don't even have all their uniforms yet for this year, there's just no way that they're going to be able to make a change. Maybe they do something at the end of the season or for playoff teams or something. I don't know. But all indications are that basically they're going to go back to the old jersey in 2025. Larger lettering on the back of the jerseys, fixing the sweat issues, fixing the see-through nature of the pants, just everything that makes it look, the fact that the colors are not matched from top to bottom, it is really, really bad. And I know we talked about this a lot in spring training, but I do think it's worth mentioning again. There's something special about that first time you get to the big leagues and you put on a big league uniform and that thing is heavy and that thing is thick. And you know what? That thing might get hot on a 100-degree day in July in St. Louis. I get it. But the feeling of putting on that major league jersey, it's so outweighs anything else. Nobody was complaining about how jerseys looked. And you know, the baseball jersey, from like a fashion standpoint, it's one of the things that people can just kind of wear out. Like a baseball jersey and a hockey sweater. Those are you can kind of get away with wearing those in, obviously not overly formal situation, but like if you work in a work situation that is somewhat casual, you probably can't get away with wearing a football jersey. You probably can't get away with wearing a basketball jersey, but you might be able to wear a hockey sweater. You might be able to wear a baseball jersey to work. There was no reason to change the way it looked. That was one thing that I think most people agreed with, that it had a good look to it. And we continue to see these pictures where you'll see one person wearing the replica jersey from last year and one person wearing the replica jersey from this year. And this year one looks just so bad. The way the numbers are and the way the nameplate lettering on the back, just everything about it is not great. And unfortunately, we're getting to a place when it comes to this that these are being mass produced. So, like for those of you who don't know, and I give the Cardinals a lot of credit for this. So the birds on the bat are stitched on, but previously they'd been actually like stitched onto the actual jersey. That's not happening anymore. Now, essentially, the birds on the bat is being stitched onto a patch, and then the patch is being applied to a jersey. And it's a little bit more complicated than the way I'm explaining, but that gives you the basic understanding. When Fanatics and Nike took over, they didn't even want to do the stitching of the birds on the bat. They just wanted to have it done basically electronically and, you know, whatever it's called, just to slap that thing on there, almost like it's a graphic. And the Cardinals and the DeWitts, to their credit, said no, that this is the birds on the bat. This is the Cardinals jersey. It's got to be better than that. And they came to this compromise of the stitching going onto the patch and then the patch going onto the jersey. So I appreciate the fact that they still have stitching, but I also in ways kind of lament the fact that it isn't just stitched onto the jersey. It bugs me. This is a stupid thing to be bugged about, but it bugs me. The Stiefel patch doesn't bug me. I'm fine. Like some of these advertiser patches out there are a little gaudy and a little bit ridiculous. The Stiefel one for the Cardinals, it really doesn't bother me that much. But what does bother me is the little patch that it's on is a slightly different color than the white. I wish they could just stitch Stiefel straight onto the jersey and not put it on a patch and then onto the jersey, but just in the mechanism of way things work now with the jersey, that's not possible. So you're always going to get that little bit of off coloring with the square, the, I guess, rectangle around Stiefel on the Cardinals jersey. I'm being very picky when I get into this stuff because I think the Cardinals have done a good job in today's climate with the jersey being produced to do as much as they can to kind of keep the sanctity of the jersey. But hopefully now that there's been this that has happened, there everybody's able to take a step back and kind of go back to what we had seen previously. And it sounds like that's the direction they're going to go. But we're going to have to wait till next year. Nate Gatter's going to join us in just a moment. You're not going to have to wait very long for that. He joins us in just a moment as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Sports Open Line does continue here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Appreciate you being with us. Coming up in just a little while, I've got a conversation with Kevin Wheeler, one of our off-day chats that we like to do. We do that fairly often when the Cardinals have an off-day, an unexpected off-day today because of a rainout. They're going to get back at it coming up tomorrow playing a doubleheader. But right now, we head back to the phones and we welcome in our good friend Nate Gatter. Of course, you hear him co-hosting the St. Louis City Soccer Report. And he pops up in other places as well here at KMOX. Hey, Nate, how are you?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. So you're a Mizzou guy. You continue to do some broadcasting work with them. I wanted to start with that. What was your initial takeaway and your initial thoughts on Laird Veach being the guy?
Yeah, not a big shocker, right? We talked about it at the beginning of the search. You know, you and I did, I think, on this program that obviously, you could do a robust search. Any university could do a robust search using only people who have ties to the Mizzou Athletics Department. If there's one thing Mizzou Athletics has done reliably well over the last several decades, it's produced really high-quality athletics administrators who have gone on to do great things. I don't know the exact number, but it's double-digit sitting athletics directors in Division I who either have spent some significant time in Missouri's athletics department, many of them in senior roles. Laird Veach was in a little bit more of a middle role when he was at Mizzou back in the 2000s. But this is a job, from my understanding, that he's always been interested in. Certainly his interest was very strong. This time around, he was, I think, a name that they had in mind from the very beginning. There were some other names that were bandied about. Again, guys that we had talked about from the beginning of the search. You know, one of those is Brian White at Florida Atlantic. You would have thought this would maybe make sense as a time for him to move because of the fact that he just lost Dusty May to Michigan. So sort of like a coach losing a star player. If you lose a big ticket head coach, maybe that's a good time to look for the next job. Ren Baker at West Virginia was also somebody in whom there was a lot of interest. One complicating factor in the recruitment was the same factor that a lot of people speculated led Desiree Reed-Francois to make sort of a lateral or even slightly downward move to Arizona, which obviously, while being a power conference school with a lot of history, is not in what is really the Power Two now from a financial standpoint. The SEC and the Big Ten are head and shoulders above anybody else, and the Big 12 has fallen a good distance behind where Arizona will be now moving forward. On top of that, the Arizona Athletics Department is in not a very good place financially at all. So it was sort of a surprising move, even though she does have ties to the university, having gone to law school there. And a lot of people speculated that it was the formal creation of the oversight committee of the four-person committee of the board of curators that would oversee athletics, and that was sort of a formal manifestation of something that had already been going on, which is that she maybe felt that she was getting some micromanagement, or at least had people looking over her shoulder, that at times people in administration of the university or as high as the board were sort of interacting in some of the athletics decision-making that would normally be reserved for the AD. I did hear with at least one candidate that Missouri talked to that was something that came up formally in discussions, that candidate would have wanted something in a contract that would indicate that basically those things wouldn't happen, that person would not be overridden at any point, that their athletics decision-making would be their own. And that, I think, I'm not an expert in how these searches normally go, is a little bit unusual and reflects clearly that the candidate pool, especially at the higher end, was at least concerned, not that it was a deal breaker, but there was at least some concern about what that looked like and just how much autonomy was or wasn't going to be afforded to the athletics director in this position. All of that considered, especially if this job sort of had a red flag or two attached to it because of the circumstances around Desiree Reed-Francois' departure, I think Laird Veach is a very qualified option. He has a lot of history with Missouri. I think this is a destination job likely for him. And on top of that, Memphis has shown an ability, even with having some challenges, mainly a really old football stadium that's not on campus, that they have at times struggled to fill, to be creative in a lot of different ways. Some of them sort of simple, like last year they offered, I forget what they called it, but essentially a rolling season ticket where you paid a certain amount of money. I think it was like $30 or $40, and you got a ticket to the opener. And then as long as Memphis kept winning, you got a ticket to the next game. So you're sort of literally invested in the team's success. And I think they ended up winning their first four home games. So you got four or five games out of your $40 ticket. I think that's really creative. And then some of it is the much more big ticket items. Like in the last month, we saw FedEx, which of course is based in Memphis and a major sponsor of all kinds of athletics venues and programs in the city, committing $25 million in NIL money to Memphis's collective. I don't know exactly what the NCAA rules are about how involved athletics administrators can be in trying to marry those two things, like bring a business together with the collective, since the money can't directly go through the university.
Oh, come on. Everything's allowed now. Nothing is being challenged, right?
Right. Either way, he has put Memphis in a position to be successful. Ultimately, what they have not been able to do and what they want to do is move into a power conference, but those spots are highly sought after. I think he checked a lot of boxes there. He brought in some big ticket head coaches in somebody like Penny Hardaway. He has done a good job. I think the Ryan Satterfield hire on the football side has looked really good. And he's been able to maintain that football momentum and avoid having coaches poached when they've had some good seasons. He hired Kerrick Jackson as his baseball coach last year or 2 years ago now. And of course, Kerrick Jackson now in his first season as Missouri's baseball coach. So there's some ties there as well. I think a lot of reasons for Mizzou fans to feel good about this hire.
Has anything changed in the dynamic with the board of curators from when Desiree left to now, or is Laird basically under the same setup that she was under?
I don't have inside information on that, but to my understanding, that committee, the oversight committee that was formed, still exists. I haven't heard anything about it being dissolved, and it would be surprising if it were, considering it was just created a couple of months ago. I expect those dynamics will probably remain similar, especially if this was something that was coming up with candidates. But I can't speak to any conversations that Laird Veach might have had and exactly what that dynamic might look like or what he's been promised. I think there's a balance, right? It's not unreasonable for, especially considering how big a business college athletics has now become and how integral it is to a university, especially a state school, an SEC school like Missouri, where athletics really are the front porch of the university in the sense that the success of football and basketball teams can have much wider impacts on the entire university. You know, we see that all the time with smaller schools that make runs in March Madness. We saw it when Mizzou moved to the SEC, that applications started coming more from the South than they had ever before. And we've seen it again in the last year as they've enjoyed this football success. Mizzou applications are up at either unprecedented or certainly much higher levels than they have been recently. And a lot of that bump is attributed to the free advertising that comes with being good at football. And it is a little bit reductive, and I can understand why academic types sometimes roll their eyes at that. But ultimately, it is important. So I don't think it's unreasonable for the board and for university administration to be invested and feel like it's an important part of their jobs to oversee athletics, just as they do the remainder of the university. At the same time, you bring in an athletics director because you trust and believe in that person to do the job. And at a certain point, you have to empower the people with the expertise that you've put in place to do any job. That's the nature of hiring someone to do a job, is you have to let them work. So I think they're probably going to work that relationship out. And hopefully it's one that can be more fruitful. At the very least, I would think Laird Veach is coming into it with eyes wide open, and they can have those discussions up front before he even takes the job, as opposed to in Desiree Reed-Brancois' case, where at least some of the reporting has been that she felt like she did a really good job. And I think objectively she did leave Mizzou in a much better place athletically than it was when she arrived. And yet she was getting this meddling over her shoulder. And I think maybe she felt that wasn't what she'd signed up for. Regardless of what Laird Veach has or hasn't signed up for, he at least understands that dynamic, because it's out there even for the regular fans to discuss.
Last thing for you, City SC coming off an off weekend. We learned a few days ago that Samuel Adeniran back practicing with the team after he'd been practicing separately. Is all good? Or is it just back to what it was before? Or is this still a story?
I don't know the answer. I think it's a story in the sense that it's something to keep an eye on, right? I don't want to make it a bigger deal than it is. I don't want to contribute to unnecessary drama. But I think it's still a story until it's not, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Until we see him back on the field in games in an ordinary role, I think it's still at least a story in the sense that it has to be discussed and you have to keep an eye on it. And I'm a little bit surprised, to be honest with you, in a good way, that he has been integrated back into team training so quickly, because the comments we heard from Bradley Carnell, what, a week and a half or so ago now, were, in my opinion, somewhat ominous and not necessarily harsh, but they were clear and to the point. And it was obvious that he didn't feel Adeniran had been meeting expectations. On top of that, as we've discussed on the St. Louis City Soccer Report, there's Adeniran's contract situation. His contract expires at the end of the year, and the international soccer rule is that when you get into the last 6 months of your contract, you're eligible to sign a pre-contract with another team in a foreign country. So it couldn't be in MLS, but in any other league, he would be eligible to sign a pre-contract as soon as sometime this summer, when his contract gets within 6 months of expiration, and City would be at risk of losing him for free. So one of the things that I mentioned at the time, and I hopefully we will learn more about this at some point, it was reported back in March that City had turned down $1 million offer for him from Europe. And that wasn't shocking that they would do that, considering how productive he's been and how integral he was to the team at that point. Now, knowing what we know, which is that he had fallen out of favor, if that was already happening, if they were already frustrated with his work rate and training, which maybe they weren't, if there was already discord about his contract situation, which maybe there wasn't, but if either or both of those things were true at the time, I'm a bit surprised City would turn down $1 million, because now there seems to be at least a chance, if not a likelihood, that City ultimately lose him at the end of the season for free. Maybe not. Maybe Adeniran comes storming back in great form in the next few weeks. Maybe there's going to be a contract extension announced and all will be good. But I would be a little bit surprised and a little bit disheartened, considering how much good business City have done to this point, if they lose Adeniran for free and all they get out of finding him as a diamond in the rough is 18 months or so of really good play, which is not nothing, but it's not as much as they could get.
He is Nate Gatter. You hear him along with Jen Cease hosting the St. Louis City Soccer Report. Nate pops up all over the place here at KMOX as well. Nate, always appreciate it. We'll be listening come Thursday night.
Sounds good. We appreciate you, Matt.
All right, that's Nate Gatter joining us on the program. One more break. We'll come back, and we'll hear from Kevin Wheeler, an in-depth baseball conversation that I have with Wheels. We like to do this on Cardinals off days, and we got an impromptu Cardinals off day today. So you get a little Paulie and Wheels coming up in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
On KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX, an unexpected Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. No Cardinals baseball tonight. Postponed due to expected bad weather in Detroit. They'll play a doubleheader tomorrow, 2:45 first pitch, so that means our coverage begins at 1:50. So we were just rolling around trying to figure out what are we going to do tonight here on Sports Open Line, and it's an impromptu off day, and we like to have off day conversations with our good friend Kevin Wheeler, so he joins us. Hey, Kevin.
It lined up well. Anything worse as a fan? Like, even as a kid when it was a Little League game, rainouts suck. I hate rainouts. I hate the anticipation of a game, and then it gets rained out. Because, look, in our line, it changes your schedules and all that. But, I mean, even when it's just being a fan, rainouts are the worst.
I will say, though, when I worked in minor league baseball, those were really, really long days day.
Yeah.
So sometimes a rainout would get you home a little earlier.
Okay.
So right. I would be okay with that.
I've never worked in the minors, so I don't have that experience. I just have the fan and then the Cardinals.
Yeah. So that would be one thing. I have to bring my daughter into work tomorrow because we have nobody to watch her early in the day.
Yeah,
so
good point.
Tomorrow during the pregame show, if all of a sudden
you should give her a segment.
Maybe. You know what? I'll be stretching. So, little Sophia Pauly will be in the house tomorrow.
Nice.
I did get that approved by the powers that be.
Good.
They had no problem with that. I wanted to go through a few things with you. So, yesterday, Wilson Contreras made a base running mistake. And I in no way, shape, or form think that's a horrible mistake to make. You should know how many outs there are.
Yes, very basic.
Wilson Contreras has made base running mistakes throughout his entire career, and this is kind of who he is. And I'm not trying to give him a pass, but if I have to choose between a guy who's going to hit you 280, close to 30 home runs, a 900 OPS, who's going to make a dozen maybe base running mistakes during the year, or a light-hitting catcher who is the most fundamentally sound base runner in the history of the world, I'm taking Wilson Contreras.
Yeah.
And I said that yesterday on the postgame show, and I got a lot of pushback on that. And I think it's important to say, I'm not saying it's okay that he made that mistake, but if you know that's who he is, you can kind of accept it.
You're taking a player and all that they bring to the table, and you're evaluating it, right? Like, offense, defense, base running, you know, leadership in a clubhouse, all of that. And there are going to be flaws with just about every guy, unless it's Albert Pujols, who is pretty much. And now, but see, even Albert got dogged.
Yeah.
He doesn't run hard to first base on a ground ball to third. That's because he knows he's out and he doesn't want to pull a hamstring wasted on an out. So everybody's going to have a little bit of a downside. That was inexcusable last night. It's a stupid, horrible mistake. But it doesn't outweigh the fact that he's arguably been your best hitter for a month. And the positive impact from that player is worth the occasional brain fart.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what that was. He just screwed up. What I found interesting, though, is that, you know, you had the Donovan play in the same inning, which was not a screw up. Those teams do that stuff on purpose because you want to draw the cutoff throw to make sure that the run scores. So if it's going to be close at all, you just keep going, and if you're out, you're out, but the run scores.
Yeah, that was an interesting. So when I read that later, I wish I would have known that's exactly what they were doing when I was doing the post game show last night, because I hadn't seen that confirm that that was done on purpose. So I want the idea that you're assuming the throw is going to come home, so you're going to try to take second on the throw. You're being aggressive, and you make – I'm okay with losing base runners being aggressive.
Right. No, it's that too, by the way. It's the double purpose.
But the fact that he did that on purpose, I guess that then presents the question in that situation, do you want to do that when you know that there's a good chance with the runner starting at second and the bottom of the – like, should you change your approach about scoring the single run in extra innings and losing a base runner based off the fact that you're in the top of the inning and there's going to be a good chance they score a run in the bottom?
It's a great question, and, like, that's a good way to evaluate it because everything is context-dependent, right? So if in your mind – and I don't know for sure that it was. I mean, I didn't ask Brendan Donovan if he ran on purpose.
He did. He said afterward they did.
Now, there's a lot that goes into this. Did the first base coach signal him to go? Did he know the right fielder throws this way and it was this shallow and our runner is this fast? And
he saw Ciani hold up, so Ciani was waiting to see whether or not that was going to get through or be caught or anything. So Ciani,
he had a pause for a second.
Yeah, had a hitch in his step right there around third. He caught that coming out of the left batter's box and was able to see that.
And if there's a chance it's going to be close, a chance, not a certainty that it's close. If there's a chance that guy could be out, then you keep going.
Yeah,
because you want them to cut the ball to come get you so that run definitely scores. Because the definite on that is what matters. Now, in a more clear, obvious play where he's going to be easily safe, well, then you wouldn't want to make that mistake. That would be stupid.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, again, the context of the extra innings, too. And top versus bottom and all that. It's interesting.
Yeah, and look, I know it's not easy to prevent a team from scoring a run there, but they almost did. And I thought the bigger question there was, did we really have to keep Liberatore going? Was there no one to face? Could Robertson not face Mark Vientos in that spot to try to get out of that when Liberatore had already thrown 3+ innings and all that? I think that I'm not saying that that's even a solution. I'm saying that's the actual second guess. Like that is a strategic question that you could have a conversation about, as opposed to whether or not you should have tried to guarantee that your single run scores there when you're in the top half of the inning.
If Liberatore gets one strike away from winning the game, gives up that hit to tie it, and then Vientos hits that home run off somebody else, I am not happy that Liberatore is taken out of that spot.
Oh, I would be. How many times has he thrown that many pitches this year?
Oh, when he's starting, I'm sure.
But he hasn't started this year. He's been in the bullpen. When's the last time he threw?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It would have been spring training, which is not that far away. But none of this is exact science, right? This is all just where can you talk about strategy? And I wouldn't mind, and by the way, you know, Vientos not known for being all that strong against right-handed pitching, which is one of the reasons he's not been able to nail down a job in New York, even though he's put up good numbers in the minor leagues. That may be the spot where you can second guess, but again, that is all it is, because Liberatore was throwing great, and he had navigated quite a bit of danger, and he had gotten himself out of it, and he looked fantastic yesterday. So it's a maybe, but I'm saying if we're looking at decisions, I would rather think about that one and talk about that one than talk about what was a really aggressive base running play that guaranteed that your run was going to score.
Right.
Because if that run doesn't score, if that runner gets thrown out, your odds of scoring in that inning have dropped dramatically.
But that's another thing with the Contreras mistake that we, in all likelihood, that had no impact on the game.
Probably
there
not.
Would have been two outs with
a runner on first.
And you had four hits all day.
Right.
So that's the other thing about talking about these base running plays. So that's his second big base running mistake this year.
Yeah.
So he's got one about once every 20 games. Yeah. That comes out to about 12 in a season. Maybe three or four of them actually impact a game.
Yeah, statistically, once that, even if he doesn't go, even if he holds and he's on first base, statistically, the odds are stacked greatly against you scoring there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Liberatore threw 47 pitches in the Dodgers series, but he has not thrown more than 22 since.
Okay.
And he was at 38 yesterday.
And again, I'm not saying it's an automatic, and I'm not even saying that it's definitely the right idea. I'm just saying that's an area where you could have a conversation. You know, when you're getting to a point where you haven't thrown that many pitches in a month, almost 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks,
it was the 30th.
Then you've got the right left thing too.
Yeah.
Because Vientos is a right-handed hitter who historically, and again, it's not like we have a ton of major league time on him, but again, one of the reasons he's not in the major leagues is that he hasn't shown the Mets that he can hit right-handed pitching well enough to play regularly. He's lost out on jobs in part because of that. But in the minor leagues, if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure that I do, his numbers against lefties have been pretty good. So, but it's Mark Vientos, right?
Yeah. I literally almost went to, like, look it up. Right. And you're like, you know what? I don't care what he hit
if
in the minors
Pete
against
Alonso,
lefties.
It's a better question, right? This is why I'm saying this is a if you're a baseball nerd and you want to get into it, that's an area you could, but it's Mark Vientos, right?
Like, you literally saw me go to my computer, and then like,
you're
I
like,
care
why
what
would
he
I
did.
Do that? Why would I do that?
Overall, I thought it was you take 2 out of 3. You don't begrudge a series win. You would have loved to get the sweep. I thought Ollie had a good weekend. Now, when the relief pitchers are pitching the way
that the bullpen's amazing,
you look really good in the decisions that you end up making. But if they keep having 3-game series like that, they're going to be fine.
Yes. That outcome on the weekend, losing one game in extra innings out of three, you know, you win 2 games against a team, by the way, that has been off to a decent start and had played really good baseball for about 2 weeks coming into that series. It's a good series win. It doesn't mean your problems are all solved, but that's a very to come out of winning 2 out of 3 against Arizona and then end up winning 2 out of 3 against the Mets. Arizona was the last homestand. Winning that series was solid. If you're taking 2 out of 3, if you don't want to hear it from Matt Pauly or Kevin Wheeler or anybody else, Tony La Russa said it all the time. You win 2 out of 3 on a regular basis, you're going to be where you need to be at the end of the year. The thing they have to do is make that a regular thing, and obviously so far it hasn't been.
And you do that by hitting more. And they hit a little bit in games 1 and 2, some home runs.
Yes, that was the difference.
But they didn't. They're still not hitting consistently.
Not enough. I mean, so I looked at this yesterday. The last 7 days or so, Goldschmidt starting to hit the ball, home run, a couple doubles, OPS over 900. So it's a good sign. Yeah. The batted ball numbers overall are still not good, but I've noticed a trend up in that week where finally, for the first time in a while, his expected numbers are better than his actual numbers. So there's a sign that maybe he's starting to creep out of it. But again, it's so little we can't say that it is. We just have to, it's like, all right, that's this past week. Now what happens in this coming week? And, you know, I wonder with Herrera having cooled down quite a bit at the plate that if his hand will allow him to catch more, if we don't see a lot more of Alec Burleson, who, you know, we talked about this like two and a half weeks ago. I was like, Burleson's not been swinging the bat well, but he really has lately. Like, he's been hitting the ball hard and hitting the ball hard a lot with limited opportunities. Maybe if Contreras can catch, like, basically every day, that gives you the chance to get Burleson some at-bats because he's really been swinging it.
He was going to start at first today. Yeah, they were going to put Goldie in as the DH, and they were going to – I'm surprised they haven't tried to give Arenado a day. You know, the other day he had the ball come up and hit his face. He had the on-base streak. A lot of times if you got a long streak like that, a manager will give a guy the day off the next day. Maybe it'll come tomorrow because it's a doubleheader. You appreciate the fact that he is playing every single day.
Yeah.
But he's had a – on-base streak comes to an end, committed an error that led to runs, had the ball hit him in the face.
Still not hitting for power.
You know, like, at some point, maybe it's time for a day.
Maybe. Yeah, I think so. And obviously, if you're looking for how you do that, I mean, Nolan Gorman just slides over.
Right. Or Brendan Donovan. You can live with Donovan for a day at third.
I'd rather do Gorman.
Okay.
I mean, again, because he has a lifetime of experience playing third base.
I don't know if they'll put Gorman at third, though, because they are so hell-bent upon defined roles this year.
I know.
I bet you when Arenado gets the day off, it's Donovan, not Gorman at third.
I wouldn't bet against you, brother. Okay. Because this is, to me, and it's not an Ollie thing. It's not a coaching staff thing. And it's not just a front office thing. It's like the whole Cardinals universe, they get obsessed with a thing.
Yeah.
And they don't want to come off that thing. And we don't want to make any exceptions for that thing. And I actually think that and sometimes it's funny because last year it was all about versatility. You got versatility. You got people. And now it's the opposite. We're not going to move anybody. Well, you know, there's a middle ground between those two things where we're going to say we're going to be a lot more regular, but we're not. It doesn't have to be militaristic right down the line. We're never going to vary. That's what drives me crazy is there's a perfect middle ground that a lot of really successful franchises navigate. Right, they're not all Tampa Bay with pieces moving everywhere all the time and openers here and all that. And they're also not, we never vary from the plan. It's okay. It's okay. Like this, you know,
you
this
can react to circumstances.
This is my whole thing about the Newt in center, right? I don't think Newt's a great center fielder, but at times when you're struggling for offense, you can adapt for a day or two or a week. Because, you know, look, I know Carlson's getting ready for his rehab assignment starting tomorrow. He should be back. If there's no setback, should be back, I would think, in a week.
Yeah.
Something like that. So now you have another option to bring, hopefully, some more offense, at least offense against lefties. I mean, you'll get that at least from Carlson, because Ciani is not going to bring you offense. And the idea that anybody in center field not named Ciani or Scott, that I don't understand the rigidity of it, but I do get the bigger picture. And at times, like if Goldie and Arenado are hitting, wonderful. Go ahead and play the defense out there. I won't care what anybody does with the bat if the big boys in the middle of the lineup are really producing, but sometimes you have to adapt. And it's just funny to me that you go from one extreme to the other. Like, you know, hey, everybody can move around, and now, hey, nobody's allowed to move around. Like, we can find, again, just there's a middle ground there.
That's Kevin Wheeler. Kevin, thanks for hanging out a little bit.
Anytime. I'm going to go hang out in the middle ground.
All right. Kevin's going to the middle ground. We'll take a break and have more in a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.